Hi guys, welcome back to the Nevermind Polly podcast. My name is Matt, I'm your host, and we chat to rock and metal bands from around the world. How are you doing? How are you living? I hope you're all doing well. Now, this is a big podcast for us. The end of year albums of the year for 2023. Now, I'll be completely honest, full disclosure, cards on the table as always with this podcast. I wasn't going to record this episode until a few days ago when I got reached out to by a couple of people on social media and said, Matt, you haven't done an album of the year podcast. Are you planning to do one? And I hummed and hawed and I said, well, I don't know, man, maybe. And then I put it on my social media basically and said, if you guys want me to record an end of year episode, I will. And that was how I left it. And basically, the decision was pretty unanimous and said, please, can we know your albums of the year list for 2023? So this is that very podcast. You're very, very welcome. One thing I do want to say, just on a personal note as well, and I'm sure we're going to touch on this in the Drunk Cast, which is being recorded in a couple of days, which will already be out by the time you will have heard this podcast, is this year for 2023 has been the best year I've ever had for content creation. I've been making content online since 2017. This is the best year I've ever had for that. I've been so incredibly blessed and so incredibly grateful for the opportunities that I've been given this year. And it blows my mind, genuinely blows my mind this year. And looking into next year, into 2024, we've already got 7 episodes for January in the bank, recorded, ready to upload. Like, that's already happened. But yeah, in terms of 2024, I'm really, really excited for lots of new stuff coming in 2024, and lots of new interviews. I'm hoping to get Rebecca back on more, and we're going to have more of just, you know, casual conversations and things on the podcast, because you guys enjoy that as well. And it's just really, really exciting. It's a really, really exciting time, and I love doing albums of the year. And to be completely honest, I had done a rough albums of the year list for myself, and I wasn't going to publish it anywhere because I feel like, and this is the trouble, right? I am such a kind of introverted person. For someone who does a podcast, who has a kind of online presence, if you like, I'm such an introvert, and I find it really difficult to understand why anyone would give a shit about my albums of the year, about my life, about any of that stuff. So I find it really, really difficult sometimes to get out of that headspace. So when people did reach out to me and was like, yo, we want to know your albums of the year, it's a podcast we really look forward to every year, I was kind of like, oh, okay, cool, right? So here we are. This is me recording it. I will say, although I've been really busy with podcasting and stuff like that, in terms of music, music's kind of taken a bit of a backseat this year. And the reason for that is not to sound like a cop-out, but it's basically time. I've been so, so busy with the podcast, and I've been so, so busy planning my wedding for 2024 with Rebecca, and that's all super, super exciting. But yeah, I haven't really had a chance to really like listen to loads and loads of music this year. But what I have done is I've consistently gone back to these 10 records every single week since they've been released. And I think these 10 records that I'm going to talk about in my album of the year list are some of the best albums these bands have put out, in my opinion. They are absolutely wonderful. I love them all so, so much. I mean, there is a chronological order in which I love them, but you know what, between 1 and 3, I don't think I could really pick. So I have picked, obviously, and I've cemented it into place, but my God, they are fantastic. I have got 6 honourable mentions as well, which I will kind of rattle through at the start of the show, which I'll do in a moment. But yeah, I just want to take this opportunity to say thank you for everyone listening to the podcast in 2023. This will be the last podcast that goes out in 2023. And yeah, we hope you've enjoyed the 103 episodes or guest episodes we've put out in 2023, because I've had an absolute blast making them, and I cannot wait to bring you more content in 2024. So without any further waffle and fuck about from me, let's get to it. Let's get to the list that is the album of the year list for 2023 for Nevermind Polly Podcast. So at number 16, so 16 to 10 on the honorable mentions. At number 16 on the honorable mentions is Foo Fighters, But Here We Are. I'll be really honest. Foo Fighters are a band who I massively respect as artists. And I think they've got a bulletproof back catalogue in terms of singles. They are a fantastic live band. I've seen them a couple of times, and they're kind of unfuckable in terms of being in the live environment in terms of singles. But the idea of a Foo Fighters record in 2023 genuinely exciting me was something I was not prepared for. This record is brilliant, and I think there is a certain amount of kind of sadness to be taken from this as well, because obviously Taylor Hawkins of Foo Fighters sadly passed away this year, and I think the fact that that is potentially what's taken, you know, Dave Grohl and the guys to sound the most fired up they've sounded in fucking years is kind of sad. But at the same time, I think through any kind of adversity brings brilliant, fantastic art. And I think the Foo Fighters, But Here We Are, is a really, really great selection, great smorgasbord, if you like, of fantastic rock songs from Foo Fighters. And I get it, because Foo Fighters are not the band they once were. They're not kind of in their mum's garage kind of playing these rock songs anymore. They are, you know, bona fide rock stars. And you know what? Sometimes rock stars can kind of lull on their laurels, and they can kind of, you know, take a back seat and kind of coast it just so they can get to the next kind of stadium shows or whatever else. But this is a really, really fired up Foo Fighters record, and I am here for it. So that is my number 16. Number 15, we are going down the old emo route. As you lot will probably know, if you're a long-time listener to the show, I am a huge emo fan, and it brings me great joy to know that Spanish Love Songs exist. Their album, No Joy, came out in 2023 this year, and it is absolutely wonderful. I was actually hoping to go and see Spanish Love Songs when they play in January here in Norwich, but the gig has sold out, and that is really, really my fault. But I'm hoping, fingers everything crossed, that I can be, a press wanker and try and blag myself a ticket for that, because I would love to see Spanish Love Songs on this tour. I saw Spanish Love Songs, they were supporting Creeper on their last album run, and yeah, just the fucking best. And I understand that some people might not love Spanish Love Songs because of Dylan's voice and things, and he's quite whiny. I do get it, but it just kind of, it scratches that kind of that emo itch, and that's the only real emo band I have on this list as well. So that's really, really exciting to have Spanish Love Songs in my 2023 album of the year list. At number 14, we have one of the greatest new bands I've discovered in the last couple of years, and that is Dying Wish, Symptoms of Survival. Can I just say how much I fucking love Dying Wish, and how much I fucking love Emma Boster? She was fantastic when she came on the podcast, and you know what? It was one podcast that I actually really kind of wish I could redo, because the lovely Joe over at Nuclear Blast said to me, yeah, Matt, we can do Dying Wish. Can we do it like in 2 days? And in 2 days' time, at the time of recording that particular interview, I was in Barnsley with Rebecca seeing her family, and I took all my podcasting equipment, and I was like, yay, amazing, it's going to be fucking fantastic, whatever. And then basically my microphone cable, so fucking annoying, my microphone cable actually broke on the transit between Norwich and Barnsley. So I had to record it using my headphones on my iPad. It was a whole fucking thing. And it kind of, it took a lot away from the interview, because I didn't feel comfortable doing the interview, because I was kind of like, I was A, in a different location to where I normally am. I didn't have the equipment I normally have. I was just solely relying on Zoom, which is an absolute nightmare scenario, because Zoom is terrible a lot of the time. But yeah, you know what is not terrible? Symptoms of Survival. It's really, really like basic in terms of, it's not reinventing the wheel, but what it does do is it gives me the riff energy. I fucking love this record. There's so much fucking hardcore metallic fucking metal on here. It's just so up my street. And like I say, Emma is a fucking star on this record. She sounds like a fucking demonic fucking demon. It's so fucking good. Love it. Number 13, we have returning podcast guests as well, previously podcast guests, in Urn, A Feast on Sorrow. I have put this in because I love this record, but this record is really, really difficult to listen to. It's a really hard listen because its subject matter is really, really hard. You know, loss is something that I've experienced this year with a few things, and it really hurts, man. It hurts so much, but this album has been so cathartic for me personally. And the reason why it's this low is just because it's a struggle to listen to, right? And when I, as I said previously at the start of the show, when I've had little time to listen to music this year, and that, I know that sounds like a cop-out, but I promise it's not. It's just the truth. You know, I want to listen to more kind of uplifting music, and Urn, A Feast on Sorrow is not that. It is very, very oppressive. It's very, very good. Don't get me wrong, it's fantastic. Musically, thematically, it's fantastic, but it is just heavy. It's heavy, heavy record. And it is brilliant, though. It is so fucking brilliant. It's obviously Joe from Gojira. Helped Joe from Urn and the boys on this record as well, so that's fantastic. And it's just, yeah, it's just, I couldn't be more proud of Urn, but again, it's just a really oppressively heavy record, and that's why it is my number 13 and not higher on this list. Number 12 is a band who I kind of, like, I knew that was coming. Like, as the album's coming out, I knew it was going to happen, but I was kind of like, yeah, okay, whatever. And that is Empire State Bastards' River of Hersey, which is Simon Neil of Biffy Clyro and Mike Venner of Oceanside's side project. And I was kind of like, I knew this was coming for a long time, this album, and I was kind of like, yeah, okay. Like, Biffy and the Oceanside guy are going to do, like, a black metal grind record. I was like, oh, I'm not going to be bothered by that. But you know what? This record is so much fun. There is so much kind of wacky, kind of crazy, kind of fucking energetic parts on this. And then there's genuine melodies. There's genuine melodies, which is only one or two stone throws away from, like, a Biffy record. And to have that, like, matched with the unhinged kind of fucking guitar riffs and the fucking screechy vocals of Simon Neil, which, you know what, in his day job, he performs in Biffy Clyro, you know, an arena headlining band, a festival headlining band, to then going to just an absolute, like I say, a just demonic kind of screechy character is so fucking cool. And I think the Empire State Bastards' River of Hersey is fucking fantastic. And I want to shout out as well, because the reason why I'm doing the album of the year as well is I want to kind of intertwine kind of my own stories about these records as well. 2000 Trees Festival was fantastic this year. I got to go as press accredited and things like that, and it was absolutely wonderful. I got to meet Simon Neil for about 30 seconds of Empire State Bastards, and obviously with Biffy Clyro, and it was just one of the fucking best moments of my fucking life as a music fan, because I have followed that man's music for such a long time. And you know what, that 2000 Trees kind of festival was so fantastic, because it was like, it was the first time in a long time where I've gone to something as press and I felt completely at home, but also completely out of my depth. And what I mean by that is the fact that I walk into the press area and there's just, like, I see Dank P. Carter of Radio 1. I see, like, Alex Holcomb of Radio 1. I see, like, fucking Jesse from Eagles of Death Metal just literally walk past me like it's nothing, right? And I get it. They are just humans. And the whole point of this kind of podcast when it started was, if given the opportunity, I want to sit down with creative types and bands and just have a conversation with them, because they are just humans. But when you've, like, do you know what I mean? When you've witnessed these things, it's so fucking cool. And I was sat chatting to a lovely pair of people. They were a couple of photographers, and we were just chatting, whatever. And I see Mike of Ocean State Bastard walk towards, like, the stage area out of the guest area, and I was like, "Fuck, that's Mike." So Simon's, you know, about, you know, obviously. And yeah, he just walked like maybe 30 seconds behind Mike, and I legged it. I fucking legged it across the bloody stage, across the press area to go and say hello to Simon Neil and shake his hand and say thank you. And that was as much as I got. But I came back and I was shaking. I was physically like, what the fuck just happened? Because, you know, Empire State Bastard and Biffy Clyro, like, that man's music is fucking incredible. And this record is fucking incredible. It's my number 12, Empire State Bastard, Rivers of Heresy. We're getting to the big one. Number 11. This was so close to making it into my top 10. But the reason why it's just dropped out of my top 10 is because I don't listen to it as much as the other records on this list. And that is the only reason. On a different day, this album would be in my top 10. And that is Code Orange, The Above. I fucking love this record. This record is fan-bloody-tastic. It is so fucking drenched in that new metal, that kind of sort of a new wave kind of... so it harks back to kind of the grungy 90s, but bringing it up to like today's kind of production standards. It's so fucking brilliant. I absolutely love it. I think that Code Orange have pulled an absolute blinder. So I've been a fan of Code Orange for a long, long time. I Am King, especially Forever is just an absolute benchmark of what heavy music can be, in my opinion, and it changed the game. Obviously, there's a lot of bands who kind of cottoned on to what Code Orange done after Forever and was like, oh, we want to do that. But for me personally, underneath the previous record to this is when Code Orange really, really cemented themselves as a band that I will love for a very, very long time. And then I actually got to meet in person, and I met him a couple of times, but I first met him at Outbreak. Stephen Hill of Metal Hammer and True Cult Pop fame, and obviously previous podcast guest. He was the most downloaded podcast of 2023, by the way. So massive thank you to Steve for coming on. We really, really appreciate it. And thank you guys for listening. But we were out, me and Becca were at Outbreak, and I just saw him on the press balcony and things, and I had my press pass, and I was like, I'm gonna go and say hello and just shake his hand and say thank you for coming on the show and all the rest of it. And he was saying to me that he was then going to interview Jamie and Reba of Code Orange, and I was like, oh my god, that's like amazing, fucking hell, like, you know, the dream kind of thing. And he was saying, I said, I'm assuming you've heard the record. And he said, yeah, I have. And I said, can you tell me anything? And he was like, it's very different to Underneath. And he was like, if you're a fan of Code Orange, you'll like it, but it's very different. And I was kind of like, He kind of put me in a mindset of like, well, what could it be? Like, and I had no idea it was going to sound like this. And I am here for it. But you know what really, I still, to this day, think about this set. Their set at Outbreak. I've waited so long to hear some of those songs, especially off Underneath, because they didn't tour Underneath at all because of COVID in the UK. So this was their first kind of show back since Underneath was released. And it was mesmerizing. It was fucking absolutely outstanding. And in fact, you can go and watch the full set on YouTube. It's all been multi-cammed by Outbreak Festival. I highly recommend you check it out. It is really, really good. And I love Code Orange so much. And like I say, if I had listened to this record more than the others, then it would be higher. But because I've listened to it a little bit less than some of the others, it is at my number 11. Number 10 is Drain, Living Proof. There isn't a great deal to say about this record, apart from the fact it's fucking wicked fun. It's so much fun, this record. It's just straight out of kind of the riffs on it for days, straight hardcore melodic, just really, really fun. Just super, super fun. And when to use an expression that a lot of people use, or used to use at least, it puts a pep in your step. If you're walking along the street listening to this record, it just gives you that extra, like, kind of yard of pace. I think it's fucking excellent. It's just really, really fun. I think it's only about 25, 30 minutes long. It's a really short record, but it is really, really good. My number nine is, again, is a previous podcast guest, and it is the wonderful, the absolutely fantastic Svalbard, The Weight of the Mask. Much like the Urn record, this is a really heavy, heavy listen, but it does something the Urn record doesn't, and that kind of, it takes that heaviness of the subject matter of, you know, depression and anxiety and kind of self-loathing, and kind of it spins it on its head with these fantastic, fantastic melodies and this fantastic kind of soaring fucking epic metalness. And that's not, metalness is not a word, but it just, it basically takes everything that kind of the subject matter is about, kind of being this kind of negative self-doubt and all this kind of stuff, that essentially The Weight of the Mask is a very literal title for this album. And I think Svalbard is one of the most important fucking heavy bands in the UK right now. Absolutely wonderful. And I had Serena on the show for the second time this year, and she spoke so eloquently about her time writing this record and what this record means to her personally. And it just, it kind of really cemented everything I love about this record and everything I love about this band. This band are fucking excellent. Number eight is a band who I really, really do like, and it is Psilosis, A Sign of Things to Come. Now, I am a huge Josh Milton fan. I think Josh Milton is absolutely outstanding guitar player. I think he's a brilliant vocalist. I think he's got a brilliant stage presence. And when he joined Architects a few years ago, I thought, yeah, this is the perfect fit for a band who've gone through, you know, a really, really tough situation, obviously, with the passing of Tom Searle and everything else. But I was kind of a little bit sad that Psilosis was kind of, you know, on a hiatus or kind of not going to be a thing as much. And I know that Psilosis hadn't been a thing for kind of a little while at that point. But so when Josh left Architects, it was kind of like, oh shit, like, that's kind of bum, right? And I get it, like, because I don't take much stock, really and truthfully, who's in bands and who's not in bands. There are certain key elements of bands that make the band the band. You know, like, for example, with Serena and Svalbard, like, if you didn't have her in it, if you didn't have Reba and Jamie of Code Orange, like, you wouldn't have the band that you have today. Like, Emma from Dying Wish, if you didn't have those members in that band, they would not be the same band because of the star power they bring. But I think Psilosis on this record have just written the best set of songs that Psilosis have written in a very, very long time. And I kind of, in a way, I think Psilosis is a bit of a super group, to be honest with you, because you've got Josh Middleton up front and center playing guitar and vocals, absolutely fantastic. You've got Ali from Bleed From Within on the kit as well. You've got Connor, who plays Condra, the Curse's Metal Hands on bass. And obviously Bailey playing just some sick fucking guitar riffs as well. A Sign of Things to Come is an album I put on a lot this year because it just makes me happy. Like, I'm such a riff guy, right? And there's so many riffs in this fucking record that I'm just like, please, if I ever go to hospital, like, give me that, just drip feed that into my veins. Like, some of those riffs are so fucking good and so fucking, like, just make you want to swing your head like an absolute Neanderthal. And that is what is really, really impressive with this. And I fucking love it. And again, it's not trying to really be really clever, or it's not trying to reinvent the wheel or any of that kind of nonsense. It is just really, really good and really, really heavy. And I love it. I think it's absolutely wonderful. My number seven is, again, another previous podcast guest. It is Holding Absence, The Noble Art of Self-Destruction. I sat down with Lucas this year, and I had Ash on in 2022, both of which were fantastic interviews, and this is a fantastic album. I love Holding Absence. I don't know how much I've talked about Holding Absence on the show. I think Holding Absence are a beacon of light in terms of the heavy kind of alt-rock scene, I think, that if that's what you want to call them. I think they're absolutely wonderful. And the songwriting on The Noble Art of Self-Destruction is so much higher than the previous two records. And I think the previous two records, again, are absolute knockouts. And The Greatest Mistake of My Life, I think, is an absolute fucking worldie. And this is exactly the same. I just think there's so much more elevation on this record. There is so much, like, again, not to nerd out too much, right? But the fucking drums on this record sound so fucking crisp, and I love it. I think it's absolutely fantastic. And it's an album I've consistently gone back to. And I just, The Noble Art of Self-Destruction is a fantastic, fantastic record. And again, like, I just think I'm really excited to see where Holding Absence go in 2024, into 2025 and beyond, because they have the ability and the capacity in the songwriting to be fucking massive. And I think in a world, a lot of the time, which isn't very fair to a lot of things, right? And it's not very fair on bands, it's not very fair on life. And, you know, there's a lot of things saying, oh, life isn't fair. But if life was fair, and if life was just and correct, Holding Absence would be playing fucking arenas with these songs. They are fucking massive, monumental fucking songs. And I think they are absolutely wonderful. Number six is Enter Shikari's A Kiss for the Whole World. Now, this is a very controversial placing for me personally of Enter Shikari, because if you know me, and if you've been a fan of the show for a while, you will know Enter Shikari are one of my favourite bands of all time, if not top two favourite bands of all time, with another band which we'll talk about later, I promise. Yeah, A Kiss for the Whole World. This is a brilliant, brilliant album, but it's not the best Shikari record, in my opinion. But what it is a fantastic set of songs. They've got some really good bangers on here. It Hurts is a fucking monster of a tune. And I just, there's certain stylistic choices on this record which I think are really interesting. I think they're really cool. But I don't think this is the best Shikari record. And what I mean by that, in comparison to like previous album kind of year shows, when Enter Shikari have put out music, they'd be number one and number two. So to have them at number six in 2023, and you know, there's five albums I'm about to talk about which are ahead of this record, in my opinion, it's kind of mad. It's kind of crazy to me to think that, you know, it's this low down on my list, but it is fucking brilliant. I really, really hope I get to see them in February as well. And you know what? I'm going to talk just for a second. Indulge me, everybody, to talk about one of the greatest things that happened to me this year in 2023. And that was getting to meet Rhea Reynolds of Enter Shikari at 2000 Trees. It was so good, and I'm going to think about that moment for the longest time. Because so I want to kind of talk just for a second to kind of give you guys an analogy, right? And bear with me. So I love my dad, right? My dad is my fucking rock. He is, you know, my fucking role model, everything. He's the perfect father figure, right? And always has been and always will be, in my opinion. And he's brilliant with my sister's grandkids. My sister's kids. He's a great, brilliant granddad to them and everything else, right? But his favourite band are Rush, right? He fucking loves Rush. He lives and breathes Rush. He fucking adores them, right? I often sometimes wonder what it would be like if he ever met any of the members of Rush. Obviously, Neil Peart passed away, RIP. But if he ever met the surviving members of Rush, what would he be like, right? And I kind of, again, I've been in a very privileged position for a long time now with this podcast to get to sit down with some fantastic artists and some fantastic people and kind of and talk about various different things. And it was kind of like, what would I be like if I ever met Enter Shikari? Because they have soundtracked my entire life for 15 plus years, right? And they've been my favourite band for 15 plus years. I've seen them, I would say, in excess of probably 10 times live. And I know that's not a great deal, to be honest. It is a lot to see a band, but it's, some people will be like, I've seen them 30. I know, I get it. Like, but basically what I'm trying to say is this band and this band's music mean a fucking hell of a lot to me, right? So I'll paint the picture. If you listen to the Knife Bride episode with Molly from Knife Bride, which is a fantastic episode, by the way, you should check it out. You will have heard this story, so just bear with me, indulge me for a second. basically, I walked into the press area at 2000 Trees, and he was just sat. There's like a selection of about six or seven benches out the front, and then there's like a big tent. And he was just sat with a few people on this bench, and I clocked him pretty much immediately, right? And Enter Shikari wasn't due to play, anything like that. So, you know, and I'd heard rumours, rumblings and things that Rao was on site and things like that. And I was kind of like, yeah, whatever, you know, it's one of those things, it's all hearsay, as they say. And then I saw him, and God bless Sarah and Abby, the two wonderful photographers I got to meet and hang out with, and Claire as well, one of the three photographers I got to hang out with whilst I was at 2000 Trees, and I befriended them in the press area on the first night and things like that. They're really, really lovely. And they were like, oh, hey, Matt, how are you? And I was shaking. I was pretty much in tears before I even, like, sat down at the press table. They're like, what the fuck's the matter with you? And I was like, Rao Reynolds is outside. And they're like, oh, yeah, who's he with? Oh, he's with I don't know, Kirsty, or with Hannah or Anna or whatever the lady and the other couple of people he was with. And he's like, oh, that's how, like, their social media manager and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, uh-huh. And they're like, go and say hello. And I was like, no, absolutely not. And you know what? It was kind of weird because I was interviewing Raptors, Simon of Raptors, the excellent Raptors, good friends of the show. And Dan from Skindred comes over, introduces himself to me, and obviously says hello to Simon because they know each other. And like in that moment, I was kind of like, I should have said, like, can I have a photo with you, blah, 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 all this kind of stuff to Dan from Skindred, because it's fucking Skindred, right? Skindred are great. But I didn't, and I bottled it. And there was multiple times that weekend where I could have got an interview, I could have got a photo, all this kind of stuff, but I bottled it because in my mind, I'm in the press area, therefore I'm press, therefore I'm working. These other press people aren't freaking out at the sight of these musicians, right? But anyway, so I was like, I can't go over there, I can't go over there, I can't go over there. They're like, you need to go over there and say hello. I was like, I can't go over there. Anyway, I did. I went over and I was so fucking nervous to go over and speak to Rao from Enter Shikari. And I can happily report that he was the fucking nicest man I've met. He was so fucking lovely. And you know what? It was just nice to get to sit down with him for maybe 5 minutes tops and just say, you know, thank you so much for everything that your music has brought me over the years. The amount of love and kind of friendships I've made and forged through your music, and the stories that you've told through your music, is so important to me. And like, I just gushed at him for about 5 minutes, and he just literally just embraced me and said, it's okay, thank you so much for everything, you know. And I asked him for a photo, I walked away, and I fucking sobbed. I sobbed like a baby on the way down to the main stage. And It was one of the greatest moments of my life, but also one of the most undignified walking away from that situation where I was absolutely just in bits. But Enter Shikari are wonderful, and I love them so, so much. And I kind of feel bad and kind of feel guilty for not having them higher on my list. But A Kiss for the Whole World is a really, really fantastic record. It's just not my favourite Enter Shikari record, and it's my sixth favourite record this year. Number five is a fucking mental band. A mental band. My number five is Blood Command with their album World Domination. I really, really, really love Blood Command. I think Blood Command are fucking superb. They are just the right shade of mental. They are kind of, they're hectic, they are kind of aggressive, they're melodic, they're just like a complete fucking head trip a lot of the time. And I got to sit down with Nikki, the front woman of Blood Command, and that's a fantastic episode as well. Like, so, so assured of herself, so, so confident when she speaks, just a fantastic episode. And World Domination, I keep going back to this record, man. The top five I could do in pretty much any order, with the exception of the top maybe 3, 2, 1. But Blood Command is just a fantastic band, and World Domination is absolutely fantastic. I just keep going back to it. The Plague on Your Houses is fantastic. There's so much good, good stuff on this record, and it kind of, it warrants, rewards, you know, more listens. The more I listen to it, the more I discover with it. And I love that when records do that. Okay, big boy time. Number four is Graphic Nature, A Mind Waiting to Die. This has come into my life this year, and oh my God, I didn't know I needed it, right? And now I'm going to use a quick analogy, so bear with me, right? So Slipknot have just announced in the last week or so that they are going on a tour in 2024, where they're doing 25 years of the self-titled Slipknot record, right? And it's like, cool, that sounds great. The first Slipknot record is great. But also, you're completely, you know, old men at this point in terms of, you know, they're not the young bucks 25 years ago when they recorded that record, right? This, if you are missing that kind of, that swagger, aggressive, nu metal kind of kick in the face like that early Slipknot material, Graphic Nature is fucking for you, right? And it's even more than that as well. It is so fucking aggy and aggressive, but also kind of, it speaks a lot to me on a personal level because my mental health this year has been fan fucking tastic, and I am so fucking grateful that I have been on such a high the last year or so because of obviously the wedding, and you know, like the last few years have been really, really good to my mental health, and I pray and I touch wood that that continues, right? But this record is drenched in kind of sarcasm and drenched in fucking metaphor and drenched in not metaphor as well. It's like a blunt fucking, like a lump of wood to the face some of the time in terms of its subject matter and talking about, you know, depression and talking about anxiety and the weight of the world and all that kind of stuff. But it's so fucking good, man. Like, there's so much on this record that I fucking love. And Graphic Nature have had a fantastic year as well. I tried to catch them at Download. Couldn't get anywhere fucking near the 10. And you know what? I will say this much about Download Festival in 2023. The fact that they put Lorna Shore on the main stage was fantastic. And then literally about halfway through Lorna Shore's set, they put Graphic Nature in the fourth stage 10, which I think is the correct decision in terms of the size of those crowds and, you know, like the size of the fan bases at that time. But what I will say was that was a fucking brutal clash. I watched Lorna Shore from the top of the hill and they were, you know, fantastic. I love Lorna Shore. They're fantastic. And I tried to get in the tent for Graphic Nature. Couldn't get anywhere fucking near it. It was rammed, and I am so fucking thrilled for the boys in Graphic Nature. The fact it was rammed, if I was to ask Rebecca, if Rebecca was sat here and I asked her what her favorite record of 2023 is, I could pretty positively say that it'd probably be Graphic Nature. She fucking loves this record, and it's through her that I guess really that this record is so high. Because whenever we're in the car, she's like, can we put Graphic Nature on? Like, she plays it around the house, and it's kind of like, yeah, this record is fucking sick. It's so, so sick. And then we go to number three. Now, okay, so, you know what? This is my list, and I stand firmly on my convictions. Number three is Olivia Rodrigo with Guts. Now, I can hear you all, like, squealing and laughing at the fact that all of my records this year have been heavy, like the Feast on Sorrow record by Ernst is heavy, the Svalbard record's really heavy, you know, the Blood Command album's mental as fuck, and then you've gone Olivia Rodrigo. I think Guts is fantastic. This is such a fucking brilliant, brilliant record. And I think there's a lot to be said for how brilliant the production job is on this record. And I get it. She's a pop star. I get it. She's going to have a brilliant fucking production job. But I was in London when I first put this record on. And this is the thing I love about kind of Spotify, Apple, Tidal, all this kind of streaming generation, right? Is when I was growing up, and I say this a lot on the podcast, when I was growing up, I had to kind of pick a lane, right? I had to pick a lane in what I was going to listen to, and I fell down the rock and heavy metal and kind of hard rock and all the rest of it. I fell into that camp, and I was like, I don't want to listen to anything else, right? But before that happened, I was massively into, like, Eminem. I was massively into, like, Dr. Dre. I was massively into, like, Ice Cube and fucking all these kind of hip-hop stuff. But also, counteracting that, I loved a fucking pop star. So you're talking like Katy Perry, you're talking like Avril Lavigne, you're talking about like Kelly Clarkson, and I get it, right? That stuff's not exactly fashionable now, right? But I still love that stuff. I still love myself a good pop princess, and Olivia Rodrigo is that. I think she's fantastic. This album, yeah, it's a lot about kind of guys and quite samey and kind of in that kind of is a thematic theme about it. But at the same time, so does, you know, the Urn record, or so does the Svalbard record. Just because it's not completely oppressive and kind of talking about a really heavy subject matter doesn't mean it doesn't warrant it to be fucking brilliant. Right, and I can actually hear you, the naysayers to me saying, well, Matt, you know, Olivia Rodrigo has got, you know, a writing team and all this and all that. I get that. I'm not disputing that. But what I'm saying is these songs are fucking amazing, and her voice is fucking amazing. The musicianship on this record is fucking amazing. And you know what? It if you're going to bring it, like, you know, full circle, if you like, to kind of rock again, right, a lot of people say a lot of shit about Nickelback, right? And they're like, oh, they're this, they're that, right? But every single hard rock band wish they could write a song as good as fucking Burn It Down or fucking Rockstar or How You Remind Me, right? Whether you like that song or like those songs or not, or like the band or not, what I'm saying is those songs are unfuckable, right? All American Bitch, Driver's License by Olivia Rodrigo, unfucking touchable, some of those songs, absolutely fantastic. And you know what? It's talking about her perspective as a young woman, right? And I really, really enjoy this record, and that I'm standing on my convictions on that, because I think it's absolutely fan bloody tastic. My number two is an album which has jumped so high in the last couple of weeks. So as I said, I put a list together about a month ago. And it was kind of a loose list. I hadn't really kind of cemented anything in. But, like, this album was probably number 12, maybe number 13, maybe 10. I don't know. It was around that number, right? But then when I kind of was like, right, I'm going to really, really hammer home these numbers and see where I'm at, right? So I gave kind of every album an honorary listen, right? Maybe just once or like halfway through. I was like, okay, just to refresh my brain on how I felt about these songs. And Paramore, This Is Why, is number two. This record is fantastic. And I have gone down such a Paramore binge in the last few weeks in preparation of writing this list. Paramore, This Is Why is written for Paramore in the 2023, right? Because the production on it is fantastic. The songwriting is fantastic. And I just love Paramore. I think Hayley Williams is such an iconic vocalist for the alternative scene. And I think Paramore as a band have transcended all of that anyway. Like, they're no longer, like, quote-unquote a rock band, in my opinion. But you know what? They sound so much better for it. Because when you A-B, you know, something like Misery Business versus, you know, the self-titled or this record or whatever, it's like, it's night and day. It's night and day how good and how different those two things are. But it's not to take away the fact that, you know, Brand New Eyes, All We Know Is Falling, and Riot is, you know, as the second album's called, in fact, isn't bad. It's just, it's a whole different band. And, like, the reason why I was kind of nervous to do an end of year list is because I've not really listened to that much kind of heavy music this year. I've been getting into kind of more kind of indie stuff. I put on, of my own accord, the 1975 the other day, and I had a fucking wonderful time listening to it, right? Because sometimes it's nice to give your ears, like, just something nice to listen to. Don't get me wrong. Like I said, you know, the Blood Command record is amazing, but it's chaotic as fuck. You know what I mean? Like, so sometimes I just want to chill and just have myself a kind of, and this is that record, Paramore, this is why, is an audio treat. It's beautifully recorded. It's beautifully mixed. It's beautiful songwriting. It's absolutely fucking excellent. If you are a fan of the Nevermind Polly podcast, if you're a fan of me in general, you will know that my number one was always the second it got released and the second I heard it in full, the second I heard that 9-minute intro to Creeper Sangavor, you fucking knew it was going to be number one. I love this record more than I can even describe. This record is absolutely fucking flawless. And you know what? There are so many things that I could talk about with this Creeper record, and I don't really know where to start with it, right? And I will start with the negative naysayers that have said to me, it's too much like Meatloaf, it's too much like kind of, it's too theatrical, it's too bombastic, it's too this, it's too that, right? And to the naysayers, I totally, totally, 100% understand that, right? And not everyone is going to like this Creeper record. And I am not going to sit here and slander anyone who doesn't like something, right? Because we're all different, and that's what makes us brilliant. The fact that we're all different, we all like different things, that is what makes us so important and so brilliant. The fact we like different things, and we can talk about it in an open, inclusive, safe way. But Creeper Sangavor is, in my opinion, the best album of 2023. There is so much to fucking love on this record. I'm just going to pull up the track listings, because this is the album I'm going to talk about, just because I could talk about this record for weeks and for days. And like I say, I just absolutely adore it, right? So it starts off with Further Than Forever, which is a 9.5-minute song, which I will admit, by my own admission, is very, very Meatloafy. It's very kind of, what's the musical Rebecca said the other day that she was reminded of? Phantom of the Opera, kind of, and I totally get it. I get it, right? And then it goes into Cry to Heaven, which I think is the best 1980s song that wasn't written in 1980. It's fucking outstanding songwriting. Sacred Blasphemy is absolutely wonderful. It's kind of, you know, Metallica, but through a Creeper filter. Fucking love that. The guitar work on that is fantastic. The Ballad of Spook and Mercy is kind of like Nick Cave, kind of via Creeper, just amazing. Lovers Led Astray is just straight up punk Creeper. Teenage Sacrifice is the best song, one of the best songs, one of the best songs Creeper have ever written. Chapel Gates is just straight up fucking, like, just straight up punk. Love it. The Abyss is an interlude, so that's fine. We can get away with that. Black Heaven sounds like fucking Depeche Mode. I fucking love Black Heaven. And that was the one that I was kind of like, ooh, when it came out as a single, I was, ooh, I don't know, man. I don't know. It's a bit, ooh, I don't know. But no, I totally get it now. It's absolutely fantastic. And More Than Death is just a brilliant way to end the record. And with Creeper Records, they obviously end on quite a theatrical sometimes, and quite, they like to end on a big song. So I Choose to Live off the first record, All My Friends on Sex Death, and obviously this one on the new one. And it's wonderful, man. It's a wonderful, wonderful fucking record. And I saw Creeper at Download Festival this year, and I cried the entire time. I absolutely, and you know what, as a 30-year-old man, I do not even care that I was surrounded by people who were lovely and who were just like, are you okay? And I was like, uh-huh, I'm just having the best time. And you know what, it's one of my first real heavy bands I got into when I sort of, so my trajectory generally went Green Day, Fall Out Boy, Enter Shikari, Bullet for My Valentine, and then it went off a cliff down into the rabbit hole. But one of the kind of heavy bands I discovered on my own was Metallica. And I love Metallica, but I watched Creeper be the best version of Creeper I've seen probably forever. Like, just, they were so fucking amazing at Download. And they were amazing at Shepherd's Bush when I saw them a couple of weeks ago. But yeah, I they were absolutely outrageous. And I walked out of the tent just absolutely in tears. And Metallica were playing on the main stage. And I just went, nah, I just can't. I was too overwhelmed by how fantastic they are as a band. And, you know, I've been so fucking lucky to sit down with some fantastic, fantastic artists this year. But I got to sit down with Jake Fogarty of Creeper this year as well. And I don't think that I have really processed that. Because, I know they're just people, right? I know that. But I got to sit down and pick that man's brain about music, about life, about the creative process, all of that stuff. And I was so prepared for that interview, and I was so ready. It felt like I had been waiting so long to sit down with one of the members of Creeper and just go, tell me everything, but also don't tell me anything, because I don't want to know the secrets. I don't want to know how you make the magic happen. I just want to tell you that I'm really glad you do. And it was absolutely fantastic. And Creeper Sangivore is my number one album of the year for 2023. I want to say a massive thank you for everyone who has supported the show in 2023. We've got lots of stuff planned for 2024. And by that, I mean we've got 7 interviews recorded, which will be going out in January. I guess and I gather there'll probably be more in the pipeline for January as well. I'm trying not to overload the interviews in January, because I kind of want the interviews to have their own breathing space a little bit. But I understand that if given the opportunity to sit down with bands who I like and who I'm into, or who I, you know, whatever, it's like I feel like I should take them because I am in a privileged position and I should do these things because they're cool. But yeah. I'm so, so grateful to everyone who has supported the show this year. And I want to just say a massive thank you. And I want to say a massive thank you to all the PR people who have supported the show, all the bands who supported the show, all the management teams that have supported the show. I want to do a massive shout out to Rebecca for just being the absolute rock that pushes me along with this podcast. When I've got days when you know, things have gone wrong and I've had fucking meltdowns and things haven't happened, I just want to say thank you to her for always being there. And this has been the greatest year, like I said at the start of the show, for creating online content for podcasting, for YouTube, stuff like that. And I cannot wait to see what 2024 has in store for us. And I promise that I will bring you the best possible interviews I can in 2024. And I promise I'll bring you the best bands who will want to speak to us in 2024. In terms of the festival content, there's not going to be as much of like on the ground festival content this year, purely because we've got a wedding in July. Me and Rebecca are getting married, and we are ridiculously excited about that. I can't even articulate how excited I am to marry my best friend. And yeah, it's going to be incredible. It's going to be incredible. And yeah, thank you so much for listening to the Nevermind Polly podcast in 2023. You're all the most wonderful human beings. I love you all so much, and we will see you in 2024. Peace and love.